What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
Prevention of crime. Every hour of the day and night.
Movie.
Break.
Is the team that protects your property and you.
How much money was left to make the film once you got the rights for September?
Yes, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good answer. My producer should be here to answer you, but definitely that was a big negotiation. It was difficult, of course. I don't know exactly how much it cost, but definitely I'm sure it was big money. But you know, directors, we dream, you know. And when I was writing the script, you know, it just came the song September, and it was because the graphic novel, it has like this chapter that says it spends 1 year. It appears the first month is September, October for 1 year. We took it in the film because we wanted to be more fluid. We didn't, in a film, you don't need to have to put it when it's a month. So when I had that idea, of course, September, and I think, okay, September is one fire, I put it in the script. So it was from the beginning. So they knew from the beginning. It was not a surprise in the last minute. So they knew that, but they had experience with me already. In Abracadabra, we had Abracadabra, the Steve Miller Band. I can tell you that was also a complex process and expensive.
Though the music tells part of the story and you have no dialogue, again, your first, or your last feature, Blanca Nieves, also was a silent movie in the old style. Yeah. What makes you decide to put your characters in a silent world?
Well, the thing is that in this case, it was based in a graphic novel that has no words. Because I collect graphic novels and illustrations, children's books without words. So I buy constantly, I have hundreds of them. So when it falls in my hand, you know, it has no words. And after Blanca Nieves, which it was such a wonderful experience shooting, and then it was so well received internationally, it was like, you know, why not do it again? But, you know, I try not to repeat myself, and I like to try different things. I said, no, it's not going to be my next film, but let's do Abracadabra, that is an hypnotic comedy, and it's colorful and unique and crazy. But then he said, okay, maybe now I do another film without words, because I for me, cinema, what makes unique is to write with images, and that's pure cinema, and I enjoy so much the combination of images and music, and I like the idea of cinema as a sensorial experience. I don't like the idea to make cinema as a cerebral, intellectual experience. I want the people to feel things, to get emotional, to laugh, to scream, to cry, but in a very kind of like, just be the other. I want the audience to forget about themselves and be the other. I want the audience to be Dove and Robot through the 1 hour and a half that lasts the film.
But does it make it more difficult when there is no dialogue, or does it feel liberating? And can you give an example of an image or a something in the film that you feel very proud of that you managed to tell that without words?
I would say I own my films. When I started film school, I started for 1 year. I only made science. That's it. When I went to NYU film school, to the MFA, and the first year, the only thing you do is short film without dialogue. That's part of the exercise to become a film director. No film. So I feel all my films, even the ones that have dialogue, Torremolino, 73, Abracadabra, they're 10 minutes, 15 minutes scenes with very little dialogue. So or no dialogue. So I feel comfortable. That's part of. For me, it's not something challenge. It's just the kind of work that I do. I can tell you for actors, when I made Blanca Nieves, it was so liberating for them. Mm. For Maribel Verdú or Angela Molina, that they didn't have to dialogue, it was great. So, but for me, I don't know, you said something that I wanted to...
Yeah, yeah, in this film, if there's something you managed to communicate without words that you're really proud of.
Yeah, for example, I would say, when I was writing the script, you know, it was an adaptation of the graphic novel, but the real final draft of the script was when I was 1 year doing the storyboard. That's when I rewrote the script truly, because I was with my art director, I was the storyboard artist, I was with my music editor, I'm the editor, so we were five people for 1 year working really hard to make the film before hundreds of animators came. So suddenly there were some scenes that they were so much more fun and sophisticated in the storyboard. For me, that's true. There are many scenes. Eh? One of my favorite scenes that it was not in the script, it was like when you've seen the film. Mm-hmm. When he goes with Doug, this girl that she's so cool and she just with the best band and the girl's getting all these fish. And then she's like, he got no fish, and suddenly he gets one fish. And when he gets one fish, he's like okay, I get my fish. What do I do? I finally get my fish, and then he does all these things of just putting the fish in the water and just like, because, and then the duck gets there, you know. For me, that's a Chaplin-esque moment. For me, if you ask me, what is my favorite director? Yeah. I said Chaplin. So that's kind of, for me, that's a Chaplin moment. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about psychedelia. There are several scenes, like the flowers scene, yeah, and another scene with the, you know, playing bowling, yes?
Yeah.
So how do you conceive that with the rest of the story?
I have to say, get clear, I don't take drugs. No, no, but definitely. Okay. I said definitely they're dreamy scenes, okay? Mm. All my films start from the subconscious. When I start a new project, I just, sorry for the expression, I vomit images and ideas, and I go like, but in a very chaotic way. For months, I never start, I'm going to make a film about friendship, or I'm going to make a film about the domestic violence, like abracadabra. No, I start with some kind of images, but then I create a tale, or a fairy tale, or a fable, to give some order. So I need orders. I need some very simple story that I can put my psychedelic ideas and try to make some sense. And when this is, makes sense, I think. But definitely, that's why it comes that element. That's why in the graphic novel, there's not a Busby, you know, there's no Busby Berkeley homage, you know.
Yeah.
For example, the bowling scene doesn't exist in the graphic novel. So then I even think that it would be a good idea that when we do this, you should see the graphic novel, because you could see that there, basically the spirit is the same. I can assure you, I love Sarah Barone, and we get along so well. And he gave me carte blanche. I could do anything. She said, it's your film. I made the graphic novel, make the film whatever you want. But there's no bowling. But definitely that comes also from a very surreal dream, you know, with Mr. Softy coming alive. And it comes alive with the music. The snowman comes alive because the music. I did an abracadabra, something similar. But yeah, I don't know. I love this kind of, you know, another of my favorite directors, David Lynch. So I think like cinema is like dreaming awake. So I like the idea that when an audience, and there's nothing more close to dreaming that it's like sleeping. You go to a dark room, you know, your dark room, you're sleeping, but you're with your eyes open. So I don't know, I just love that experience of cinema.
Yeah, and also early Disney was like that, yes?
Yeah.
So do you consider your film to be like also for the younger audience, like for the children, or not so much?
I consider for everybody. I really do. Eh? I don't want to exclude audience from the film. I really feel like I want to make open films. I want kids to come to see the film. I want the parents with the kids come to find the film. I want a hardcore cinephile people go to see the film. And I want an old couple that go once a week to see a film to come see it. I really think that cinema is a popular art, and we cannot forget that. I really don't really especially like when sometimes some directors, they really want to make them just for one audience. You know, I want the idea that cinema, you see it, it's a popular art, you have people from different backgrounds, different economical status, and share a catharsis. And that's, I'm a romantic, you know, and I've been a romantic from the beginning. I don't know. I hope I keep that child inside of me, and I want to share that feeling.
It's set in that seamy 80s New York. What is your special connection with the city that you portrayed it so lifelike?
The thing is that I've been going to New York since 70s, and I'm not saying that I'm old, but I'm, you know, when I was a teenager, I went in the 70s. In the 80s, I went many times, but I lived a decade in New York from 1990 to 1999. I went with a scholarship to study in NYU, a master in film.
Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As a Fulbright scholar.
Yeah. Cool. So I had this scholarship. I spent four years in New York. I met my wife in New York. I had a visa, I could work. So my life was in New York. So my closest collaborator is my wife. She's been working with me. She's a still photographer in all my live action films. She's associate producer, and she's a music editor because she's a musician. You know, directors, we don't know how to do anything, I promise you. So she's been with me all this time. So I don't like to say it's my love letter. It's our love letter to New York. my wife, she was the one, Yuko, she was the one that worked very close with the art director, because that director had been once to New York, okay? So my wife lived 10 years with me. So she was next to him through the whole process, location scouting, making sure that the switch, that the hallway, that the door, that the car, the size, that the lights, that everything had to be, we wanted to make it very precise. This is a true New York. It really is not a thing that is more or less. It's a period film. So that's why we wanted to make this film. And in the book, doesn't say it's New York. The graphic novel, Sarah. But I know, but the way, she's a New Yorker, Sarah. So you could feel, yes, the city, that's New York. But when I was writing, I said, okay, I got it. It's one of, New York is the third protagonist. Because the movie is not about robot and dog. It's about robot, dog, and New York.
But this meant that you had to, that struck me that you put in dark elements. You get these graffiti speculators out, you get these missing persons pictures on the milk cartons. You also get a shot of the Twin Towers, which is very charged right now.
Yeah.
How did it feel putting all that in?
Well, I wasn't making a real film. You know, this is not a film. This is not a film for children. I think I really like the idea that I want to treat the children like adults, and I want the adult find their child inside. And that's why there's something about that is just like, I don't, you know, of course, when I was writing the script, of course, when I was doing the background, some people would say, but how could you have those messages or the missing or this? But it's cheap. No, it's not, for me, it's not a children movie. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Cannes Festival every year makes a special screening in a film that they think the children can enjoy. They're not going to put in a Haneke last film, okay? Don't have children that are 8 or 7. So, but it doesn't mean that it's a children's film. So I think it's clear that you guys have to help the film, which I want the children to come to see it, eh? But it's not a children's film only, I think. Yeah. Did you enjoy the film?
Of course, and I wouldn't think it's for children at all.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about this, as we are talking about the precise names, brands, and so on, about the brand of robot, Amiga 2000. Is it like invented, or is it really?
Is it noise? Okay. It's invented. You know, I put Amiga 2000. I went because Amiga.
Oh, Amiga. Okay.
In Spain, amigos. I said, okay, Amiga 2000. It was in the '80s, so the word 2000 sounded. It was always very cool, and then we put Berger, Berga, Berger. In Spanish, we say Berger. My great grandfather was French, but in Spanish, it's Berger. But every country pronounce my last name, so it doesn't matter. We put Berger or Berger Corp. So it was, because I'm the director, they gave me an homage.
The story also deals with urban isolation. How did you put that theme in? And was it changed from the graphic novel to the movie?
It was there. The character, the thing is that I, you know, the character is amazing. I don't know what Sarah did. You know, it was her first graphic novel. She has published 20 books since then. Her most successful one was that one. It was a gigantic hit in America. You guys released all of it. And it was about this lonely dog, and it was there. It was there. And I think loneliness in the big city, we know what it is. There's loneliness everywhere, but we know what is loneliness in the big city. So that definitely, for me, wanted to capture that. And in New York, it's one of those few cities that you see people, which is, that's a very cool thing. People go alone to the movies, or they're in a cafe, or they're eating alone, which is fine. You know, I think loneliness shouldn't be something negative, you know, it's something that you have to know how to live. I have, you know, I'm married, I have a child, but I have so many of my best friends. They live alone, and they're very satisfied with their life. Nothing like, oh, you are lonely. No, I live alone. So that's a choice. I think also loneliness is a choice.
Your story is also about longing for the past love.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how about that? Was it in the original story?
Well, the thing is that what's the difference between friendship, love is love, friendship plus sex, who knows? But definitely the movie will be understood in a different way. If you are 8 years old, it's going to be your friend. If you are over 15, or over 30 or 50, love is definitely, there's a love story too. Definitely it's about love, of course. And, you know, I had a really nice conversation with with one person yesterday, one journalist, and he was saying, like, you know, when I was watching the end of the film, I could only think about Casablanca. It was great.
Yeah. The characters are also...
They had the theme, they had the song. You always have Casablanca.
Yeah, and you don't expect your characters to be in such a strong relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is until the end, then you realize, like, how strong is the bond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's memories. If you remember people...
Okay, yeah. You can feel that in a film.
Yeah.
Very much.
It's good to see that you're still moved by your own film. It's
not about me moving. Yeah, you get moved, but I think about I made this film for the people I...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The characters are also genderless. They're like neutral and you can project any identity on them. Was there ever some... drive to make it more clear, maybe from production companies, because I read a few reviews that seemed to be confused by the fact that that many characters were not ascribed clear gender. It wasn't a problem for me, but some people seem to think that way. Was there ever somebody that was like, okay, this has to be female or male, or they can't hold hands or stuff like that?
This is an independent European production, a Spanish-French co-production. There's no marketing plan. There's no objective. This is just, you know, a director that writes story, talks with his producers. We are all romantic. I haven't even read the reviews. I'm going to read them, and I'm going to read what, and I'm really looking forward, but I haven't even had the time to do it. But no, there was no plan. Definitely, Sarah's Baron, that is the region, a book, you know, the gender is not very clear, and I like that. In the movie, some of the characters, they are, you know, maybe you can feel the gender more one way, but others no. And the race is the same. And I think that makes it more universal. And I think if there's a city that represents that, it's New York. I can tell you that, you know, because everybody lives in this melting pot. It's a jungle of races and choices. And if what impressed me when I moved to New York, it was freedom. Diversity. La palabra diversity, now we talk about diversity, in New York it's always been there. It took a longer time to Madrid, to other cities, other countries, but in New York the diversity was always there. I'm talking about America, I'm talking about New York.
But still, were there certain associations and cliches you consciously avoided? To put it bluntly, would you put breakdancing monkeys in the film?
No, of course, no. There were some moments that some people would say, you don't want to put certain races with certain cliches, you know. We put like, you know, you can have like a sheep that has like Afro hair, it could be white. It really, the races, it's just, you can maybe intuitively think, well, maybe that's Asian, maybe that's black. It didn't matter because it could be an alligator, could be Asian and black, or there is no animal assigned to any race. Yeah. That's for sure. That was a conscious
element. It's not Art Spiegelman.
Completely. We never put like, okay, these are Orthodox Jew, or these are Asian, or these are the animals that represent. Mm-hmm. Any animal, if somebody said, oh, this is this kind of race, fine, but there was no assignation for animals.
Can you talk a little about your cooperation with animators? Because you had such a big group.
It was great. That was so much fun. Because the animators are like the actors. In life, actually, you work with actors. In animated film, you work with the senior animators. Because the animators is like an army. And you have the general is the director of animation. That is Benoît Ferremont. Amazing French...
Belgium
animator. Yes, sorry. But definitely a great director and comic book artist. Fantastic.
Yes.
Very well-known comic book artist. He's the boss. Okay, he's the general. And then he has like these, you know, officials that they're like maybe like 6 to 10 very senior animators. And then you have 90, that they're different levels of animators. So with these captains, you have a very intimate relation, you know. We see for 2 years every single day. I meet every single day with Benoit, and then animator that is doing 1 minute scene, you know? And then, and you have this process, basically you have a storyboard, animated, it's very simple, that we did alone for 1 year, 5 people. And then when the 100 people come, you meet with these animators and you start doing, first you do a layout, a very simple, and then you do something you call rough, and then you go tie down, and then you know, it's a whole, and then you put ink and paint. So it's a long process and you see how it comes to life. First is something rough, and then they are improvising and you change and you say, no, the pupils move more. No, let's move, look down. No, you have to look down. And as a director, you're really actually, you're moving absolutely everything. It's really such a, if you want to, I'm surprised that those great directors that made super controlled film, like, you know, Hitchcock would have been a great, or Kubrick, I don't know. I think Kubrick is making, I'm sure he would have lived a little longer. I'm sure he would have made an animated film, because if you like to control, you have a complete control. This is the closest film I made to the dream that when I was writing the script, it's the closest. It doesn't mean that it's the best, but it's the closest. Because one thing that live action directors, we love is the collaboration process, truly, because the actor proposes you things. I'm dying to work with actors or with a DP. A DP said, why don't we put the camera here? And you went with the storyboard like this, and then the DP said, no, let's go like this. And you're like, okay. And you have to decide now, okay? And the actor is coming, oh, I thought about this. And you're like, no. It's adrenaline, eh? I'm telling you, it's a completely, animation is like, live action is in a slow motion. Because it's the same. But, you know, let me think, I can say in animation, let me think about it. Tomorrow I'll tell you, in a live action. Yeah, where do I put the camera? Here, there, or here? You get really something.
What's the advantage of having a director of animation who is a comic book artist in his own right?
Gigantic. Because the thing is that Benoit, he's a genius, he's great. Yeah, his short films as a director are great, and his comic books are great. Basically, the sensibility, Benoit, I imagine, is very similar. Mm. You know, he has emotion and he has humor. And he has a touch. And he has the age and he has the, I don't know. So in his case, it was key because the story with Benoit is unique, you know. There's so few artists, 2D animators and good animation directors in the world, especially in Europe. Now, 3D, there's a lot of 3D animators, but 2D, this is an old art. It's almost forgotten. It's getting back. So I had to talk with some animation directors in Europe. There are very few that had the level to make a movie like this. So somebody said, one of my art director, he's not a friend, but they follow each other. They're both comic book artists. They respect each other. Said, have you known the work of Benoit Ferland? Oh, I don't know. So he showed me some things. Have you seen his short film, The Lion and the Sheep? No, he said, and I saw the short film, his last short film, No Words. You should watch it. Mm-hmm. The Lion and the Sheep. The woman said, Monkey and the Lion and the...
Monkey.
Benoit Ferland, short. Yeah. 8 minutes. The protagonist is a lion. Monkey Man, something like that, you should watch it. So I saw that, I said, wow. So we contact him, we have Skype, long time ago. And we kind of like, And Benoit told me like, yeah, they always offer me this postcode, just coming, just ended. I said, they offer me things, but it's so difficult. He was the Tripes of Belleville, one of my favorite movies of animation of all times. He was in the Book of Kells, Tom. And Cartoon Saloon, another great. So it was like, he had a very, and then he read the script and he loved the script so much. And he always told the same story. I went on to my wife and the door, he has a life in Brussels. And he says, Christelle, I don't know, I have to do this. So he fell in love with the story because he understood the story. And he made something very generous. He came to Spain to live for over a year and a half and he left his comic book career, his family. So just because he wanted to be with us, and we needed somebody of his level to make this film, because it's difficult, you know, so he was key. And then talking about that, then he was the leader, he was the general, and working with animators was so much fun. There, some of them are very technical, some of them are very emotional, some of them are very fast, some of them are very slow. It was a great experience.
You put a lot of horror movie and also horror literature references in the film, which was a lot of fun. Are you like very infiltrated with horror? Like, do you love it?
I love horror film. Yeah, I always. It's my pleasure, you know, to always to see what are the great. Every year there's always some great horror films. You always have to catch up with them. Yes, and my first short film that I call it my punk short film. It had a lot of gore. It had a lot of aliens. It was a pretty crazy film. So I like to put those little. I like little details in the background, you know, like Pet Cemetery there, or like some reference to like, oh, we enjoyed to make the Halloween scene. We had so much fun.
Of course.
Oh my God, to put the costume. What did we put? Oh no, yeah, from The Shining. Oh no, what did we put out here? The Killer Clown. Oh yeah, here we put the. So we had to put all these. Let's put Michael Jackson there in the background, like a thriller dress. But only appears like for what? So you almost have to be. I have to tell you that when I was been working for the film for so long, and in the mix you have to watch it all once and something over and over, and the sound is, and when I still see many things that I didn't know because they're extras, figure out, they draw like, no, you're, and I don't want to see it again, but if you see it again and you see it, and you just stop it and you see it again, you're going to see things, many things in the background and little surprises. Horror movies too.
Yeah. Yeah, you got Frankenstein and Psycho in the same film. In the same scene.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, it's good. And then the Psycho homage, you know, I love to have these homages, you know. I think that, you know, the Psycho it's more, the thing is that I'm a cinephile. I love more to watch movies than to make them. Honestly, to make movies is too hard. It's too hard. I'm sure you like more to watch movies than to write about them. So for me it's for me to watch the movies is like pleasure, but to make them. So what I like, because I watch so many movies, I put a lot of homages. I love to put like some little, I'm almost like a game. But from the beginning of my films, from Torremolinos, it's a guy that wants to make films and his reference is Bergman. I don't know if you've seen it, but Blancanieves is a homage to silent cinema and Abracan. So I always put like, what movies can you find that I put there?
And are you planning to shoot another animation? Is it like the language you found for yourself?
Not that I have a plan now. It's not like, oh, I have to make another one. I don't know, but I'm sure I will, because it was a great experience. I enjoyed it very much, very, very much. And it's funny, there's other live directors like Fernando Prueba, Kimechi Conrita. He made another one now. That Sony Picture Classic Art. Wes Anderson, he keep making. Richard Linklater, he has made a few. So I think when a live action director tries animation, if he's patient, he really needs to have a quality. Have to be very, very patient. He repeats because the schedule is much lighter in terms of longer. But you go to the studio at 9 and you can leave at 7 and. And maybe you don't work in the weekend, but in live action you go crazy. And you have control, and you don't have the answer. You say, "Let me think about it. Let me think about it." You have more time to think. So I enjoy the process very, very much.
And will you always do 2D? Because Wes Anderson stop motion, Linklater is rotoscoping,
yes.
Which is different. Again,
I feel comfortable with the 2D. The thing is that as a kid, you know, some of my favorite moments when I was a kid was to watch animation on TV, and it was always 2D, you know. It started with Japanese animation like Mazinger Z, Speed Racer, Hanna-Barbera, Popeye, I don't know, all that kind of, Chuck Jones, Tex Avery. But if I have to say a key moment as a kid watching TV, I don't know if it was very popular in your countries, but in our country it was like, in Spain, Heidi. Takahata.
Yes,
that's Takahata.
Yeah.
Marco. Takahata. I didn't know who Takahata was when I was a kid, but and then you understand why Ghibli is what it is, because Miyazaki also worked in Heidi. So definitely, I'm looking to Ghibli always. You know, Japan, you know, it's kind of my way. But yeah, but I think there's no limit. You know, definitely, in a way, my producer for my film is like my mother. She's younger, much younger than me, but she's like my mother's. I'm a spoiled kid. The thing is that he said, Pablo, but You've been making storyboards on all your previous films, and you have spent, I always spend 1 year with a storyboard, but not only animation, live action. Eh? I like to do, some directors never do storyboard, but I don't mind to change everything on the set, but I like to go with my storyboard. I go like this, and then I change it. But you were prepared just for, you. All the previous films were preparation to make Robot Dreams. So, and in a way, it's true. It was not hard. It was like, I felt natural. Oh, okay. Instead of directing actors, I was directing with anime. And I was definitely saying, what if people now look down like me? And at the end, if I didn't feel emotional, the thing that at the end, the director is the following. You have the camera here. I don't look at the monitor. That's my case. Eh? Only if it's a very complex shot at the camera. But if it's a normal shot, I'm here looking at the actor. I'm looking at the, only look at their eyes. Only, eh? I'm looking at the eyes. If I'm doing action, and if I get emotional, if I do an emotional scene, if I, it's like a, I don't know, like a lie detect, emotion detect. If I get emotional, okay, good. We got it. I said, another take three. And with animation, it's exactly the same. I go, okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Okay, mm-hmm. I look at the scene. I look at the computer. I say, yes or no? No, no, no. No, the people have to move more. No, no, no. It has to be, no, it has to be first, it has to come now. And then they come, they do the change. And I see it, and I say, okay, we got it. But I have to feel it. Exactly the same. There's no difference. And this film is about emotions.
Last question.
This film is about emotion. If I don't, you know, if to an audience I don't achieve it, I failed with that spectator. Because I want that when people come to see this film, there's emotion and humor. I want the people to feel, oh, surprise, have fun. I don't want to be like, oh, no, they don't want to be like, no, it's, there's emotion, but there's fun, and there's action scene, come on. There's this, with the anteater, with the ski race. Yeah. That's a James Bond scene, guys. Then we have a musical, so it's not like.
And your movie stays even very bright when the story gets quite dark, as one of the characters is on every level, like emotionally, physically, literally destroyed. It still stays very bright. So why that contrast?
Because life is like that. I think I don't like pure genres, like drama or comedy. And life is like this. I see everything through the glass of lightness and humor, even if I'm living a big drama. You know, I think it's a way to confront life. So I wanted that the film had that kind of like my point of view of life, you know.
Yeah. Are you a good artist? Can you draw?
My drawings are the worst. No, not at all. You know, I see directors, many directors. No, I'm not, of course, I don't want to compare. Don't even, I'm just putting the name. Takahata didn't draw. Ghibli, Miyazaki, yes, of course, he draws amazing, but Takahata. So, but I don't draw. I don't play an instrument.
So do you stick figures to make it?
I work with great artists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I work with a big, great storyboard artist. We sit together. We spend, the storyboard artist and me, we become, for 1 year, we're just, every day we meet and we are, and maybe I do like, yeah, maybe sometimes I make a little stick figure or I explain it to, and we work together and the guy draws amazing. Yeah.
So you are like a conductor with an orchestra.
The director is closest to that. It truly is like that. You really have to try to, you have to see the big picture. That's a question to get a picture and feel like in this case, emotion and tone. So my obsession is the tone and the details. And oh, don't be careful. But I work with great professionals. So they do the things right. I'm only like little details here and there and make it shine.